Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram weekend edition for Saturday, September 11th, 2021. Section A. DOJ charges local in riot. Affidavit. Photos show former jailer in Capitol building. By Caitlin Randall. Corey Ray Brannon, a former jailer with the Midland County Sheriff's Office, was arrested and charged Tuesday for allegedly attending and participating in riots at the U.S. Capitol building on January 6th, according to court documents. Brannon was photographed outside the Capitol with other rioters, according to an arrest affidavit that was unsealed on Thursday. He's seen in the photo wearing a Trump 2020 hat, camouflage clothing, and a tactical vest with a 3% patch. The 3%ers are an extremist far-right militia movement. Other photos show Brannon inside the Capitol building, according to the affidavit. He allegedly is seen in secure footage entering the Capitol building through a window. The affidavit states that the footage shows him walking around the building for several minutes before exiting through the Senate wing door. FBI investigators spoke with MCSO Captain Adam Hilliard on August 12th, according to the affidavit. Hilliard allegedly identified Brannon in multiple photos inside and outside the Capitol. The FBI also obtained a search warrant of Brannon's phone number, which allegedly showed he had contact with several individuals inside the Capitol on January 6th. Brannon is facing charges of knowingly entering or remaining on restricted grounds, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building, violent entry or disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds, and parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building. Those charges are Class A and B misdemeanors, punishable by a total of up to 3 years in prison. Brannon had an initial appearance in the Western District of Texas before Judge Ronald C. Griffin after his arrest on Tuesday. He was released on personal recognizance bond on the same day. Sheriff David Kreiner did not immediately respond to a Reporter Telegram request for comment regarding when Brannon's employment with MCSO ended and the circumstances at the end of his employment. Brannon is the third Midlander to be arrested in connection with Capitol riots following the indictments of Jenny Cudd and Eliel Rosa in February. Rosa entered a plea agreement on July 29th, agreeing to plead guilty to a misdemeanor charge of parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building. He has not yet been sentenced. A status hearing is scheduled for Cudd on October 13th. Resulting shale revolution from 9/11 shaped Permian Basin and the U.S. industry. By Nella McEwen. On that September 11th morning in 2001, the images of the attacks on the World Trade Center in New York, the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and the field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, were beamed into homes and offices of Permian Basin oil and gas operators as they were around the globe. Though the terrorist attacks occurred before the shale revolution, 9/11 would catapult the Permian Basin into global prominence as a world-leading energy producer. They colored how the world operated. The first impact of 9/11 was to raise security concerns for the global oil industry to a level never before seen in modern times. Daniel Yergin, vice chairman of IHS Market and author of The New Map, told the Reporter Telegram by email. It put a new emphasis on energy security and highlighted the jihadist risk to the Middle East and global oil supply. 9/11 led directly to the invasion of Iraq and the toppling of Saddam Hussein, which opened Iraq up, although with continuing stress along the way, to the international industry. For the United States, 9/11 renewed the clarion call for energy independence, but that remained a goal that seemed unattainable for another decade until the shale revolution delivered it. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, sees today's oil and gas workers helping honor those lost in the attacks. Honoring the memory of the victims of the attacks and the heroes who paid the ultimate sacrifice to save others should reignite the passion of what America stands for: strength, hope, and determination. The oil and gas industry is proud to do its part, today and every day, to help keep America secure through reliable, affordable, and sustainable energy. Economist Ray Perryman observed that the attacks did not have a huge immediate impact on energy markets. On the actual day of the attack, prices spiked to about $31 a barrel. They had been in the low 20s, but then fell into the high teens immediately after that. I remember thinking at the time that everybody must have rushed out and filled their tanks that day and then stayed home for 3 weeks. Much of this immediate impact occurred because of the shock effect and the sharp but very temporary reduction in air travel. The market recovered quite quickly, and by early 2002, both prices and rigs were on the decidedly upward trend. He said the attacks changed the world in many ways, and today would likely be different if it had never happened. But the discernible effects on the energy sector were short-lived, although the ebb and flow of the subsequent war in Iraq did cause disruptions from time to time. Perryman did not list the attacks as among the biggest influences on energy markets over the last 20 years. He cited three, beginning with the ongoing revolution in technologies such as hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling, which he predicted will be one of the major events of the century when historians write about it in the future. Next will be the pandemic, because the disruptions have persisted for so long. And finally, the emerging discussions and policies surrounding climate change. Odessa oilman Kirk Edwards, president and chief executive officer of Latigo Petroleum, told the Reporter Telegram he sees two impacts from the day. First, it showed us that countries we thought were our friends, like Saudi Arabia, actually had people that harbored and cultivated hate against our country. The reaction by President Bush and other countries was swift and powerful, but to me it showed the people of the United States that we need to think inwardly first about who our friends and enemies are, especially on the energy security side of that equation. He added the actions taken since then to fortify our strategic energy complexes were an important step in that process, and these fortifications are still being upgraded today, especially on the cyber side. On the 20th anniversary, Michel Flournoy, a former U.S. Undersecretary of Defense for Policy under President Obama, is currently chair of the Center for a New American Security and the co-founder and managing partner of West Exec Advisors, told Conservations that the nation needs to get back to the first principles and examine what are vital interests. Keeping Iran from becoming a nuclear weapon state is a vital interest. We need to build a necessary coalition to do that. Even though our energy situation has changed and most Americans think that we no longer need to rely on the Middle East as a source, this is a global market in an integrated market. What happens in the Middle East can have very profound effects on the energy prices, and that affects all of us. Where we stand after war on America. A commentary by editor Stuart Doreen. I really don't know what to say about the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Of course, it was a horrific day in our nation's history and a reminder of what evil persists in our world. There are people out there that want to bring harm to Americans and others who enjoy the freedoms that we take for granted in the United States. Those terrorists will go to places we can't even imagine and demonstrate an unbridled hatred, including the unprecedented suicide missions of flying aircrafts into buildings that were symbols of our American excellence. Those extremists will lure us into endless wars on their soil and take advantage of the naivety of our leaders, who believe it is possible to force our morals, standards, and even our democracy onto places that have existed for centuries without them. If the fall of communism taught us anything, that type of change must come from the grassroots and not appear to be forced on anyone. I don't know what to say 20 years later, because as much as our leaders wanted to manufacture a mission accomplished moment over the past two decades, there wasn't one. The truth is, 9/11 was not my generation's Pearl Harbor, because the greatest generation celebrated victories across the globe to ease the pain of what happened on American soil. Just a couple of weeks ago, we gave the Taliban its country back. It's hard on Patriot Day to come up with the words, because in the end, it's difficult, if not impossible, to pinpoint how the other side was held accountable for the damage caused on 9/11 or in the 20 years afterwards. Gold Star families in West Texas and across the state and nation still mourn the deaths of their brave sons and daughters. Midland's Jake Young was killed in an Al-Qaeda-engineered bombing in Bali in 2002. I want to say thank you to those people who served and their families, but I feel absolutely horrible because those leading them, Republican and Democrat, put them in unwinnable situations with no apparent end game. Yes, we killed Osama bin Laden, the face of evil after 9/11, but where Al-Qaeda left off, there are other extremist groups ready to wreak havoc. We have the dead bodies of 13 American service members to prove it. At home, are we better off than we were on September 10, 2001? It's hard to make that argument. We were unified long enough to sing God Bless America, but it didn't take long for the opinion makers and self-centered politicians to poison that country first spirit. Social media made the competition between the left and right to be more divisive, more outrageous, more controversial, more deplorable. The person who disagrees with me online, even on such apolitical things as bond issues, school names, COVID, guns, abortion, or Donald Trump, is no longer a friend, but my enemy. Facebook conversations have become the ultimate litmus test of, are you with me or against me? I will spend time on Saturday morning remembering 9/11, the shocking images of planes flying into towers, people falling off buildings, smoke billowing from sites of destruction in three states, and the aftermath of the Declaration of War on America. I will think about how we can do better, not to be more conservative or progressive, but to be better Midlanders, Texans, and Americans. This newspaper will celebrate those who have and continue to put their lives on the line for our freedoms. It will continue to be there for military organizations that want to make use of our space to honor those that have made the sacrifice to protect you and me. We will attempt to be better moderators of civil discussions about what's best for our community, region, state, and nation. We will attempt to call for more accountability from our elected leaders and representatives who put us in these situations that are unwinnable, bring death or injury to those we love, rack up debt this country can't afford, and turn our attention away from home and leave our collective spirit broken. Here's hoping that after you take time to remember, you join us. We hope you aren't so entrenched in our current adversarial condition that you take part in the rebuilding of communities, states, and this country. We will disagree, but we can certainly also do a world of good. Thank you again to those who served, and God bless our nation on Patriot Day. Hospital requiring vaccines for staff. Biden's mandate forces decision at MMH, by Caitlin Randall. Because of President Joe Biden's sweeping vaccine mandate on Thursday, all Midland health workers will now be required to be vaccinated, CEO and President Russell Myers announced Friday. Myers said the Biden administration requirement that all health care workers be vaccinated will be issued as regulations from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which hospitals must follow to receive funding. We in the hospital are going to be conscious of what happens with rulemaking by CMS, and we're going to step up and abide by the rules we're given. Those regulations from CMS are expected to be published in October, according to Myers. He said there will likely be medical or religious exemptions available, but those who receive exemptions will probably need to do ongoing COVID-19 testing. About 72% of Midland Health's staff is fully vaccinated. He previously said officials were hesitant to require vaccines because they couldn't afford to lose even a few employees who might quit rather than be vaccinated. On Friday, he said they were less concerned about losing staff now that it's a federal mandate for healthcare workers to be vaccinated, and they won't be on our own anymore. We certainly could still have people who are unwilling, for whatever reason, to abide by a vaccine mandate and choose to leave, but it will be more difficult for them to catch on at another healthcare provider. Additionally, on Friday, Chief Nursing Officer Kip Bredemus said the hospital is opening 4 additional beds in the progressive care floor to meet a growing demand in that area. There's a possibility of opening 2 more beds on that floor, but they're still limited by staffing. The number of COVID patients dropped down to 93 on Friday morning, but Meyer said it's far too soon to say the surge is ending. The testing positivity rate has remained at about 25%, which Meyer indicates hospitalizations will continue. Midland Health mass vaccination clinics will resume on Tuesday. Appointments are available for first and second and booster shots for those who are eligible. Currently, only those who are transplant recipients or immune compromised are eligible for boosters. Appointments can be made at midland-health.org/schedule-my-vaccine. Legacy and MHS ceremonies mark 9/11 remembrance. Legacy and Midland High held a ceremony Friday morning in honor of the 20th anniversary of 9/11. The ceremonies were led by the Midland ISD Air Force Jay Rotsey. They featured students singing God Bless America and the Star Spangled Banner, as well as the playing of taps. Air Force Junior Rotsey members raised the American flag, and a ceremonial wreath was presented to honor the victims of 9/11. Ceremonies were attended by students, staff, members of the Midland Fire and Police Departments, as well as members of the community. MISD to hire personnel to help with virtual learning. MISD is seeking personnel to be part of its new remote conferencing program, according to a news release provided Friday. Remote conferencing will offer virtual learning for students who are unable to attend school on campus due to quarantine guidelines. This may include a temporary medical condition as defined by a doctor or having had close contact with an individual who has tested positive for COVID. Remote conferencing is a much-needed option for those students who temporarily cannot attend school, said Greg Cuellar, deputy superintendent of the district. We're looking for teachers and personnel who can navigate these unprecedented times and resonate with students via a virtual connection. Remote conferencing personnel do not need to be certified teachers. Interested community members are encouraged to a district's website. The position of teacher assistant/remote instructional facilitator is considered part-time, and the pay is $25 an hour. What is required is a caring, attentive adult, Cuellar stated. Quarantining students of all grades will be eligible to participate as a part of MISD's focus on academic achievement. Kindergarten through fifth grade students will participate in 2 hours of live two-way instruction facilitated by a teacher, then work at their own pace using Google Classroom for an additional 2 hours, according to the district. Students in grades 6 through 12 will receive 4 hours of live two-way instruction, as well as additional assignments to complete at their own pace. Students meeting the quarantine criteria may participate in remote conferencing for up to 20 instructional days throughout the course of the school year. Students will need to access to a computer, laptop, or a tablet, as well as internet access to participate in remote conferencing. Devices and Wi-Fi hotspots are available for checkout from each student's home campus. Remote conferencing begins Monday for students who qualify. 22-year-old man faces intoxicated manslaughter charges. An Odessa man has been charged in connection with a deadly Labor Day weekend crash. Leonel Torres is facing two counts of intoxicated manslaughter, a second-degree felony. Odessa first responders were dispatched on September 5th at about 2:30 a.m. to a single-car crash in the 4,000 block of 52nd Street. The investigation revealed that a black 2007 Chevrolet Tahoe being operated by Torres was traveling west on 52nd at a high rate of speed before leaving the roadway and striking a fence and a tree. Torres and a rear passenger identified as 19-year-old Alexa Luna were ejected and transported to MCH with life-threatening injuries. Luna later died. The front passenger, identified as 19-year-old Brian Contreras, was pronounced dead at the scene.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Saturday, September 11th, 2021. Apartment rents sustain year-over-year drop, by Stuart Doreen. Apartment rents in Midland continue to drop year-over-year, according to apartmentlist.com. The website shows a one-bedroom median rent of $710 and two-bedroom median rent of $867 in Midland. Those median rents are among the cheapest in the state. Apartment List also shows the median rent is down 8.6% in September compared to the same month in 2020. The website also shows Odessa is among the leaders across the nation when it comes to rent decreases. The median decrease there is 12.9%, which is higher than not only Midland, but Williston, North Dakota, minus 11.8%, Oakland, minus 9.1%, and San Francisco, minus 6.9%. According to the September rent report, Odessa and Midland are the only two metropolitan areas with rent decreases year over year. Other reports across the region included two-bedroom rents of $1,122 in Abilene, $1,077 in San Angelo, $1,021 in El Paso, $928 in Lubbock, $911 in Amarillo, which also tied Midland with a one-bedroom rent of $710. Notable rents reported across the state included $2,027 for a two-bedroom in the Dallas suburb of Flower Mound, $1,913 in Mansfield, and $1,862 in Frisco. Apartment List reported that its national index increased by 2.1% from July to August, a slight cool down from the 2.5% the month before, but nevertheless a continuation of rent growth that has persisted since the start of the year. Since January 2021, the national median rent has increased by a staggering 13.8%, the report states. To put that in context, rent growth from January to August averaged just 3.6% in the pre-pandemic years from 2017 to 2019.
22-year-old man faces intoxicated manslaughter charges. An Odessa man has been charged in connection with a deadly Labor Day weekend crash. Leonel Torres is facing two counts of intoxicated manslaughter, a second-degree felony. Odessa first responders were dispatched on September 5th at about 2:30 a.m. to a single-car crash in the 4,000 block of 52nd Street. The investigation revealed that a black 2007 Chevrolet Tahoe being operated by Torres was traveling west on 52nd at a high rate of speed before leaving the roadway and striking a fence and a tree. Torres and a rear passenger identified as 19-year-old Alexa Luna were ejected and transported to MCH with life-threatening injuries. Luna later died. The front passenger, identified as 19-year-old Brian Contreras, was pronounced dead at the scene. Edinburgh man dies in collision on 349. A 44-year-old man from Edinburgh passed away Thursday as a result of a collision on State Highway 349. MPD reported Thursday evening that around 3:30 p.m., Midland Police and Fire responded to a vehicle accident in the 8,000 block of North Highway 349. Officers located a gray 2012 Ford F-150 on the shoulder of the northbound lanes and a semi-truck stopped in the inside lane of the southbound side. Officers located a male identified as Rodolfo Perez from Edinburgh, deceased, in the driver's seat of the pickup. The initial investigation found that the Ford had been traveling southbound on 349 behind the semi-truck, which was also traveling southbound. The Ford struck the back of the semi-truck and then crossed the northbound lanes, coming to rest just off the shoulder of the roadway. Next of kin had not been notified. The investigation is ongoing.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the obituaries from the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, September 11th, 2021. Benny Dean Raiders. Benny Dean Raiders, age 74, of Odessa, died Sunday, September 5th, in Athens, Texas. Benny was born August 9th, 1947, to Malcolm Dean Raiders and Jane Winiger Raiders in Odessa, Texas. Benny is preceded in death by his parents, Malcolm and Jane Raiders. He is survived by his daughters, Carrie Heflin of Austin, Texas, Miranda Morgan of Midland, and Melissa Warren of Midland, brother Herb Raiders of Midland, sister Carolyn Stevenson of Odessa, plus grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Celebration of life service will be at 10 a.m. Monday, September 13th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Arrangements entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign his guestbook at sunsetodessa.com. Dawn Marie Witten Howard. Dawn Marie Witten Howard of Midland passed away on Sunday, May 3, 2020, surrounded by her family. Dawn was born to James and Patricia Witten on September 17, 1958, in Midland. The family moved to Hobbs, Monahans, and Snyder before moving back to Midland in 1965. Dawn married her soulmate, Randy Howard, on May 23, 1998. They combined five children to create a large and loving family of seven. Dawn battled cancer for 6 years. She was amazingly strong and handled the fight with grace and an ever-present positive attitude. She was preceded in death by her father, James C. Witten. Dawn is survived by her loving husband, Randy Howard, along with sons Kyle Weir and wife Megan, Clay Weir and Caitlin Steer, Blake Howard and wife Katie, along with daughters Whitney Hildebrand and husband Ethan, and Alex Howard, and seven grandchildren. Also surviving her are her devoted mother Patricia Witten and siblings Eileen Lands, Natalie Schwartz, and Chris Witten and wife Julie, as well as numerous adoring aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, cousins, and the Howard family. In memory of Dawn, we ask that you do an act of kindness in her honor. Donate to the Brookwood Community, 1752 FM 1489, Brookshire, Texas, 77423, or Home Hospice, 808 West Missouri Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. A celebration of her amazing life is planned for 2 p.m. Saturday, September 18th, 2021, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. A live stream of the service can be accessed by going to npwelch.com. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Jorge Levi Chavez. Jorge Levi Chavez, 59, of Fresno, California, passed away July 15, 2021. Jorge was born August 28, 1961, in Santiago, Aitlan, Guatemala. Jorge is survived by his father, Reverend Axel P. Chavez, brothers Axel Adolfo Chavez and wife Alma, Gary Rene Chavez, Jamie Salvador Chavez and wife Lisa, Arvin Benjamin Chavez and wife Dora, sisters Lydia Judith Acosta and husband Ramon, Ana Lisbeth Cifuentes and husband Placido, Ruth Magali Natividad, Lydia Cristina Ariza Alfonso, his beloved nanas and numerous uncles, aunts, cousins, nieces, nephews. He's preceded in death by his mom, Judith Morales Chavez. A memorial service will be held Sunday, September 12th at 3 p.m. at Iglesia Bautista La Fe, 408 State Street, Big Spring, Texas. Burial will follow at Garden in the Desert Cemetery, Big Spring, Texas. Judith May Carr. Judith Judy May Carr of Midland entered eternal life Wednesday, September 1st, 2021. Her spirit is carried on by her three surviving children, nine grandchildren, seven great-grandchildren, and an extended family of nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends from every walk of life. She was born May 13, 1936, in Port Arthur, Texas, to Ernest and Odie Warren, and is preceded in death by her parents, brother Ernest Sanford Warren Jr., sister Ima Grace Blackburn, and son Dwayne Douglas Gardner. Leo Judy met Leo Carlton Leo Carr, a Korean War Navy veteran, at a dance, which was the luckiest night of her life. They were married February 4th, 1955, and went on to spend over 66 years of marriage together. Judy is survived by her husband, Leo Carr of Midland, sons Joe Carr and wife Cindy of Fayetteville, Arkansas, Mark Carr and wife Gretchen of Midland, and M. Carr and wife Jamie of Midland, as well as many nieces, nephews, and cousins. She is also survived by her grandchildren. A memorial service will be held at a later date. The family requests any remembrances be made to the Hope House, American Cancer Society, or a charity of choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Larry Dennis Wolf. Larry Dennis Wolf of Midland passed away on Monday, the 6th of September, 2021, due to COVID-19 complications at the age of 75. Larry was born to parents Leslie and Virginia Wolf on December 24th, 1945, in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Larry is survived by his four sons, Gary Wolf, Glenn Wolf, Brandon Wolf, and Trevor Wolf, his seven grandchildren and three great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his father, Leslie Wolf, mother, Virginia Wolf, and his beloved grandson, Quentin Wolf. Per his wishes, he will be cremated without viewing or ceremony. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Marivelle Cristina Perez. Marivelle Cristina Perez, age 46, relocated to Heaven from Austin, surrounded by her loved ones on Friday, September 3rd, 2021. She was born March 2nd, 1975, in Midland, Texas, to Ignacio Subia and Cristina Vasquez Subia. On August 4th, 2017, she married Miguel Perez. She is survived by her beloved husband of 4 years, Miguel Perez, parents Ignacio Subia Jr., Cristina Subia, two siblings, Marissa and husband Sean Olguin, Ignacio Subia III, brother, eight nieces and nephews, 11 aunts and uncles, and many cousins. Funeral services will be held Saturday, September 11th at 1 p.m., at Nally Pickle and Welch, 3800 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery at 3 p.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Marjorie Jane Jennings. Marjorie Jane Jennings, 96, of Denver, Colorado, formerly of Odessa, Texas, died peacefully in her sleep September 5th, 2021, at Bellevue Suites at DTC Assisted Living. Born December 8, 1924, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, she was preceded in death by her parents, William and Lois Cutting of Tulsa, Oklahoma, her late husband of 35 years, Willie Jennings, and her daughter, Rosemary Lynn of Odessa. Survivors include her daughter, M. Gale, and husband, John Kleinschmidt, and granddaughter, Lucy Kleinschmidt of Denver. In lieu of flowers, those interested are instead encouraged to offer a donation in Marjorie's name to the Alzheimer's Association. Death notices published Saturday, September 11th. Billy Wayne Stanley. Billy Wayne Stanley, 59, of Odessa, passed away September 1st at his home in Odessa. Billy was born January 24, 1962, to Billy and Betty Jane Wagner in Odessa, Texas. He is survived by one sister, Sharon Diane Bynum of Odessa. He is preceded in death by his spouse, Sandra Darlene Stanley, and his parents, Billy Wayne Stanley Sr. and Betty Jane Wagner. There will be no services held at this time. Elvia Amaya. Elvia Amaya, 79, of Midland, passed away September 9th. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Sunday, September 12th, at the branch of NPW, 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, September 13th, at the branch at NPW, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Robert D. Perry. Robert D. Perry, 83, of Midland, passed away September 7th, 2021. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 18th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Survivors include wife Shirley. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, September 11th. It's been two decades since terror attacks. Today is a time to reflect on the lives lost 20 years ago. Take a quiet moment to reflect on your own or during a First Responders and Permian Basin Better Business Bureau caravan of emergency vehicles that will drive down Chris Kyle Memorial Highway this morning. Beginning at 8:46 a.m., the time that Flight 11 crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center, the Odessa Fire Department, the Odessa Police Department, and the Ector County Sheriff's Office units will turn on their sirens and head down the Chris Kyle Memorial Highway from the intersection of 42nd Street and Kermit Highway on the west side of Odessa and finish at the Chris Kyle Memorial. The event will be called Never Forgotten, the 20th anniversary of 9/11. It's also a good time to visit Memorial Gardens Park at JBS Parkway and 42nd Street. Every September, for almost 20 years, Prosperity Bank, in conjunction with the City of Odessa, has displayed thousands of American flags at Memorial Gardens Park as part of its American tribute with a small ceremony to honor the first responders and those who were injured or died in the September 11th attacks. This year, the flags will still be on display through September 20th, but there won't be a public ceremony due to COVID-19. It's still a good way to honor those who died and to reflect on how that day changed us. Looking back, three ministers in Odessa and Midland agree the experience of 9/11 was an unforgettably disturbing one that is still having negative repercussions in American society. The Reverend Mike Hanks, pastor of the First Assembly of God in Midland, said he was totally overwhelmed that something like that would happen in the United States. I was just trying to piece it all together and figure out what was happening. At that time, I had no idea who would want to do something that disastrous. It was only in the ensuing days that Hanks learned the responsible parties were Al-Qaeda and its leader Osama bin Laden. It was kind of like the pandemic with the uncertainty of everything, he said. It caused me to pray and ask for wisdom. The Lord has been good to us all. He has been gracious, and he always honors his word. He has been faithful, and we had to learn how to trust him, that we could not fix that problem. It has to be the Lord who turns things around. Asked what needs to be fixed in American society, Hank said, it's a sin problem, not just a terrorism problem. It's the lack of making Jesus the center of all things in our lives. Dan Johnson, head elder at Emet Ha Torah Church in Odessa, said it was quite a shock that such a thing would actually happen on American soil. But then in reading the scriptures, we knew that such a time of trouble would come upon the world. The question was, is it the beginning or an isolated incident? I think it was a wake-up call to America that has not been heeded very well. Thousands of people flooded the churches, but within 4 to 6 months they were back to their previous lives. Johnson said society has deteriorated since 9/11, with the prevalence of abortion and same-sex marriages, among other developments. Faith Temple Fellowship Pastor Donnie Kiker of Odessa was going to work at UPS when he began seeing all these devastating things on TV with the hijacked airliners crashing into the World Trade Center, he said. Nobody knew what was going on. Then we realized it was a terrorist attack. It was a horrible day. It opened our eyes and taught us not to be fearful. But who would have thought then that that would happen on American soil? Kiker said life in the U.S. is much better than it is in most nations, but the country still has serious difficulties that it has not dealt with effectively. One thing we can control is our border situation, he said. I'm all for the American right of passage, but we need to do it the right way, the legal way.
COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 23,027 total cases, 443 deaths. Midland County, 23,620 total cases, 309 deaths. Texas, 3,821,518 total cases, 60,061 deaths. U.S. cases, 40,870,648 total confirmed cases, and 656,318 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. The United family will once again participate in the Muscular Dystrophy Association's annual Isles of Smiles campaign to raise money in the fight against neuromuscular disease through September 28th. All United supermarkets, Market Street, Albertsons Market, and Amigos locations will participate. To get involved in the campaign, guests can purchase qualifying products marked with Isles of Smiles tags across the stores. A portion of the sale on these specific products will go to support MDA's research on treatments and cure for muscular dystrophy, as well as other neuromuscular diseases. The funds raised will go to support people and families in the area where they were raised.
For more information, visit mda.org/isles-of-smiles. The Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce has scheduled its annual banquet and Bailando con los Estrellas, Dancing with the Stars, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Thursday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center at 305 East 5th Street. Members who make a difference in community will be recognized. Local Odessa leaders will suit up, and Baile Folklorico, with assistance from UTPB's Folklorico program. The public can also vote for their favorite celebrity for $1 online at odessahcc.org/banquet. Proceeds for this program will benefit the UTPB Folklorico program, select nonprofits, and the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. For tickets or information, visit odessahcc.org/banquet. Serenata en el Pueblo, Mariachi Serenade, part of Celebrando la Cultura Hispanic Heritage Month, will take place throughout the day on Friday at different locations. To book the mariachi band for 20 minutes at your location, call Carol Uranga at 432-349-9840.
Local News Roundup. Man charged in connection to officer-involved shooting. A 20-year-old man was arrested after he was reportedly involved in an officer-involved shooting that happened in August. Darian Gonzalo Sanchez was charged with aggravated assault against a public servant, a first-degree felony. Sanchez was reportedly arrested on Thursday in Midland by Texas Department of Public Safety. More charges are anticipated and the investigation continues. The reported officer-involved shooting happened around 10:20 p.m. August 30th in the area of 3rd Street and North County Road West. OPD reportedly responded to the area of 3rd Street and North County Road West around 10:20 p.m. Monday to assist Ector County Sheriff's Office deputies. A robbery turned into a pursuit. During a pursuit, shots were fired at officers and an OPD unit was struck. No one was hurt. Man charged in fatal collision. A 22-year-old man was arrested following a fatal collision over Labor Day weekend. Leonel Torres, 22, of Odessa, was charged with two counts of intoxicated manslaughter with a vehicle, a second-degree felony. The fatal collision reportedly happened at 2:47 a.m. September 5th in the 4,000 block of East 52nd Street. Investigation showed a black 2007 Chevrolet Tahoe being operated by Torres was traveling west on 52nd Street at a high rate of speed before leaving the roadway and striking a fence and a tree. Torres and a rear passenger, identified as Alexis Luna, were reportedly ejected and transported to Medical Center Hospital with life-threatening injuries. OPD announced Tuesday morning that Luna had died. The front passenger, identified as Brian Contreras, was pronounced dead at the scene. Torres has been booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Thursday. He has two bonds totaling $120,000 and was still in custody as of Friday afternoon. Local News Roundup. Pet Shot Clinic. A $30 vaccination clinic has been scheduled from 10 a.m. to noon, September 25th, at Jim Parker Park, 3100 East University Boulevard. Vaccinations that will be given are Bordetella, rabies, and DA2 PPV. City county license will also be available, cash only. There will be an adoption event, vendors, and more. All dogs must be leashed and cats must be in a carrier. For more information, call 368-3527 or visit odessa-tx.gov or odessapd.com. Fall Sweep. Keep Odessa Beautiful has scheduled Fall Sweep, community-wide cleanup event, today through November 20th, the first 10 groups to register get a KOB goodie bag. Register by September 30th to be guaranteed a free KOB t-shirt at odessa-tx.gov/458/annual-fall-sweep. For details, contact KOB 432-335-4686 or email kob@odessa-tx.gov. A Life Made in Music, The Love Story. The Permian Basin Opera has scheduled A Life Made in Music, The Love Story of Kirsten and Keith Chambers, at 7:30 p.m. September 23rd and September 25th at the Yucca Theater, 208 North Colorado Street, Midland. The concert includes a performance the Hispanic Cultural Center of Midland's Ballet Folklorico. Accompanying musicians include the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale, String Quartet, and Luann Lane. Tickets can be purchased online at the Permian Basin Opera's website, mypbo.org. The American Heart Association has scheduled the Permian Basin Heart Walk to celebrate heart and stroke survivors, raise life-saving funds, and encourage physical activity September 18th at the Medical Center Hospital Center for Health and Wellness, 8050 Texas Highway 191. Registration is at 8 a.m. and the walk starts at 9 a.m. The funds raised from the Permian Basin Heart Walk go towards research, advocacy, CPR training, and to promote better health in support of the Association's 2024 Health Equity Impact Goal, reducing barriers to health care access and quality. Visit www.2.heart.org to learn more. To register and give, visit PermianBasinHeartWalk.org. Odessa's sales tax revenue up nearly $60,000. The city of Odessa recently received its September sales tax check in the amount of $4,494,988.50. This amount includes the economic development sales tax of 1/4 cent. The city of Odessa will receive $3,595,990.80, and the Odessa Development Corporation will receive $898,997.70. The city saw an increase in sales tax revenue, with September's sales tax revenue total of $3,595,990.80, which reflects an increase of $597,938.54, or 19.94% as compared to September 2020. The Ector County Hospital District received $3,290,180, an increase of $325,146, or 11% over the same period last year. The 2020-21 year-to-date amount is below the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $6,835,376.80, or 14.8%. The city has budgeted $36 million in net sales tax revenues for this current fiscal year. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax revenue from 2 months prior to collection, i.e., September's collection is based on July sales. Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, September 12th. Hispanic Heritage Month to Start Wednesday by Michael Bauer. Hispanic Heritage Month will begin Wednesday, and numerous events are lined up on the calendar in the Permian Basin for the 30-day celebration. The event will start with a Vaquero breakfast at 7:30 a.m. Wednesday at Dos Amigos on Golder Avenue. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray will be the keynote speaker at the event. Hispanic Heritage of Odessa Executive Director Carol Uranga says this year's Hispanic Heritage Month will have an education theme to it. The entire month is dedicated to educating our kids, Uranga said. The Hispanic Heritage of Odessa will also be announcing their billboard, which will be displayed at 2760 Andrews Highway. Our billboard is called Our Future, Uranga said. It's a billboard filled with kids in different careers. In the middle of that is a little girl in her cultural dress, because no matter what they become, they take their culture and their heritage with them. State Representative Brooks Landgraf will also be at the program for the Lila Alert. Also on Wednesday will be the Pioneer Family Exhibit reception at 2 p.m. at the Ector County Library. The El Grito de Dolores is scheduled to take place at 6 p.m. Wednesday at the La Margarita Festival Grounds on 1257 West Monahan Street. That event will feature folkloricos, mariachis, costumes, and food trucks. On Thursday, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce will be having its banquet at 6 p.m. at the Odessa Marriott. Friday, September 17th, will feature a Serenata en el Pueblo, where the mariachi band will play for 20 minutes at different locations. We're going to do it in the nursing homes and public entities, Uranga said. It depends on how many sponsors we get. The list of events for the Hispanic Heritage Month will also include the Linda Abela Medical Professionals Awards at 11:30 a.m. on September 30th at the MCM Elegante, and the Business Excellence Awards at 6 p.m. October 7th at the Business Professionals Premier Ballroom, 6482 West University. On October 9th, the Tamaleras play will take place at 6 p.m. at Ector Theater. The month's events will wrap up with the Dia de la Raza Fiesta finale at 7 p.m. October 15th at Ahuas. All of the awards last year during the month were held virtually due to COVID. We did some good things, Uranga said of last year. The media was good in putting us out there. We made it upscale. We had a lot of cooperation. I think we did a good job, but we're ready to go with the flow, whether we're doing a live event or a virtual event. We feel it's important to continue doing what we're doing and acknowledge the accomplishments that Hispanic individuals have done for the community. Uranga also was thankful for the supporters in the Permian Basin who helped put these events on during Hispanic Heritage Month. We do appreciate the supporters that we have in the community, Uranga said. Those people that want to be a part of our events, they understand and we have a mutual respect. That's what keeps us going. We're all one group of people under God. We're all the same. But culturally and reality, we are different. It can be at an individual level, but we accept who we are and work together. We try to be a part of everything we can be and lend our support to as much things in the community. We have a really good and viable membership, and we're all excited to start our Hispanic Heritage Month celebrations.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.